Hey, everybody, just a quick word before we start this week's episode. We want to tell you about this great thing that the improv troupe Human Propaganda is putting on October 20th at the People's Republic of Coffee Cafe there on 12th Avenue here in Seattle. Beautiful Seattle. It's going to be great. I am going to be the guest monologuist, and I'm going to be telling some stories, and then the Human Propaganda, along with Rachel Bell from 97.3 FM Cairo, is going to be acting them out. It's free October 20th. It's a Saturday. Come on out, will ya? Well, hello and welcome, everyone.
I'd like to have a little informal chat with you, okay?
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast.
I'm not joking around here.
This is episode 117.
Woo!
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series.
You don't want to get mixed up with a guy like me.
I am your host, Aaron Roden.
I have behaved badly sometimes.
And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Welcome, everyone. We've got a great show planned for you this week. It's going to be awesome. You're going to love it. We are talking with the band The Great which will be here in a little bit. Caleb Thompson and Jake Weedy from the band will be joining me here in Dining Room Studios in just a moment. But before we get to them, we want to talk together, right? That's what we do. That's how we do. We're gonna do it. Does it just seem like I'm like trying to come up with like new slogans for the show all the time? Well, I am. All right. Your assumptions were correct. Oh man, lot going on right now. Of course, as you listen to this, I will be lounging on the sand in beautiful Oahu. I am on vacation right now. Let's try to figure this out. Let's try to predict the great time that I'm having in a tropical wonderland, shall we? Let's think about this for a second. So I'm probably drunk, and enjoying the beach with my family and friends. We're going over there with a couple of great friends of ours, Kyle and Kristen. Kyle, of course, has been on this show a couple times. He's the lead singer for Kirby Crackle, the nerd rock band Kirby Crackle, and also the guitar player for Explone. And yeah, his parents live over there, and luckily his parents love my child. So free babysitter, built in, right? So can't get much better than that, man. But boy, man, I am really, really looking forward to this vacation. Oh, man. We're only going to be in Hawaii for about a week, and then we come back, but I've taken a whole bunch of days off of work as well. So it'll be super nice just to have, you know, just about 2 weeks off. And yeah, it's going to be great. I haven't been on a vacation for like 2 years. 2 whole years. So this is much needed. So needless to say, all of these, this episode is being pre-recorded. And then next week, we'll have another great show that I know you guys will enjoy because it's very, very talented Sarah Cahoon from the Sub Pop lineup. She's got some stuff going on, man. Got a new album out and everything. But we'll talk about that next week. So as you know, let's see, a couple weeks ago now, or a week and a half, whatever. Boy, my timeline is really messed up since all this stuff is being pre-recorded. Whenever it happened, episode 116, the in memoriam episode of for my friend Kelly Dickerson, who lost his life in the ocean off of the Washington coast a couple weeks ago. A strange, not a super strange thing happened, but it, you know, when I put that out there, I put it out there on Facebook because I, you know, where everybody's a Facebook friend with somebody you knew from your childhood, right? So I wanted people to know about it, people that knew him. And I put the word out there, right? And I was contacted by a few people that I didn't really think I was ever going to get contacted by in my life. But ended up, you know, getting messages from them, from people from my childhood. And there was this one story that kind of popped out at me that I had totally forgotten about, but was so funny that happened to me and Kelly when we were kids. And I just wanted to share it with you guys real quick. It's not a sad story, so we're not going to get sad here. We're not going to get sad. We already did that, right? We were, let's see, sixth grade. I had my first girlfriend, Hashi Shane, in sixth grade, and boy, was she cute. But she would make me very nervous. We didn't do a lot of talking to each other. We did, at one point, after one movie, we went out in a big group of people to this movie called Matinee. Do you guys remember that? What's his name? Shit. Anyway, Matinee, look it up. It was a horrible movie. It was bad. I just remember it being very bad. But as kids, we were all sitting up in the front row, and that was the first time I got a kiss from Hashi Shane. On the lips, man, no less. Wow, right? Boy, that was one hell of a movie after that. There was no French kissing involved. It was just always like pecks on the cheek or pecks on the lips, right? So this one time we're riding the bus, and everybody is egging us on that we need to go ahead with this French kiss. And everybody's kind of, you know, telling me not to be a wuss and to do it. And, I just could not bring myself to do it. I was so nervous. Man, and looking back on that now, what a stupid kid. What a stupid thing to be nervous about, right? But it's normal. It's normal. So at one point I remember I didn't want anybody watching. So we pulled my coat, my jacket over both of our heads, and we just kind of sat underneath that jacket and stared at each other for a little bit. And now I'm working under the assumption that Hashi is she's an experienced sixth grader, right? I'm working under that assumption, thinking that she's French kissed all sorts of boys and I'm just going to suck at it. And so anyway, it comes down to the point where, you know, she's playing it up like she knows what she's doing. And I'm just like, you know, red in the face, and I'm like, I can't do it. And so Kelly Dickerson pipes up and says, I'll do it. And he French kisses my six-year-old girlfriend right in front of my face on the bus. What the shit? I don't remember caring that much, though. I don't remember caring that much. It didn't mean too much for me at that point in my life. So anyway, I get this message from Hashi Shane, who now lives across the country from me, and she kind of relayed that story, skipping a couple of the facts, that we were dating, and we were supposed to be the ones French kissing, but Kelly took charge. And anyway, it was just super, super funny. And she did point out that was her first French kiss. So she lied. She lied to me. Got that? She lied to me. Man. God. Anyway, it's fun to reminisce about stuff like that, but not fun in that type of scenario, right? When you lose somebody close. But if there's one thing that death is good for, it's reminding us of all these stories and allowing us to get in touch with each other and relay them to one another. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Anyway, we're going to get started here. Wish me luck over in Hawaii. I don't think I'm going to need it. Actually, I probably will need it because I need to remember to wear my sunscreen. So we'll tell you all about it. We'll tell you all about it when I get back from vacation. It's going to be awesome. And I think you're really going to enjoy this We're featuring music today from the Great new record called What the People Want. This song is called Shake, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with the band. Be back in a moment. I like it when you got that good thing. All right, welcome back. I am joined here in Dining Room Studios by two parts of the Great which you just heard there. That song is called Shake off their new album, What the People Want. Welcome, guys, Caleb Thompson and Jake Udy.
Hello.
Thank you.
How's it going?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you for coming. This is a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you in my dining room.
It's a beautiful dining room.
Thank you. Thank you.
Table to match.
I'm going to turn you up just a little bit more. I know we're going to get a lot of background hiss, but you know what?
We can deal with it.
It's fine. It's fine. Nobody cares. So, guys, how long? Because you guys are also in the Glass Notes, right?
I am in the Glass Notes with Rob Benson, who is the drummer of the Great who
okay.
is not here at the moment. But Caleb and I work on the magazine, The Monarch Review, together.
Okay.
So Caleb
okay.
is not in the Glass Notes currently.
I thought it was just like a huge incestuous band relationship.
We're working on that. We're trying to get him in to play something.
And Caleb, you're the guitarist and singer.
Yeah.
For the Great
Yeah.
And Jake, you are the bass player.
Yeah, that is
correct.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
So how long have you guys been doing the Great How long has this project been going on?
I guess it's been about 2 years. That's what I'd say.
2 years or so, yeah. There
have been some interruptions here and there.
Yeah.
Medical injury.
Yes. What other kind of injury is there?
Mental?
But that's all right.
I don't know.
We'll argue about it later. Put it on the big list of things to argue about.
So what kind of energy? What happened?
I broke my hip last summer.
No shit.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm really old feeling. I fell. I thought I could jump a fence. I was.
Was there alcohol involved?
I was wasted, man.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It was. I'm ashamed about it.
Apparently.
You know, thanks for. I'm glad this is how
we
it starts.
Up the interview
thanks for bringing it up, guys. No, so you were trying to. I'm totally going to talk about this now.
I know.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's fine.
So you thought you could jump a fence?
Yeah, it was about 2 feet tall too.
Really? Would your leg like get caught in it or something?
Yeah, you know, I tried to like throw my hands up, you know, on it, and then throw my legs over, and just my legs just didn't get over.
That's a tough. That's like when you're drinking, like that's the toughest jump, like because you can jump in, like if you've been drinking a lot, and you just get like a running start, and try to jump something, you'll usually just like, you know, go straight into it. So your hands are there to kind of stop you, right? But yeah, you try to vault something, and you're flirting with death. So there's broken hips, apparently.
Yeah, which caused a little hiatus while that healed.
Man, but how long did it take for your hip to heal?
I guess about 3 months.
That's a long time, man.
Yeah, it was a real bummer.
Yeah, yeah. And you just hold up at that time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't walk. You can't fucking walk. And it's weird, too, because, you know, they don't cast it. They can't cast it. So, right. I mean, they put, you know, four or six metal rods in there, but it's just exposed, and you got crutches, and
right,
you're, you know, kind of trying to get around, but and trying not to fall over again. And it's weird. Very depressing. It was a very, very dark time for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Were you writing music during that time?
I wrote
Were you able
some,
to even hold a guitar?
Yeah. I wrote some music. I can actually only think of one song that sort of stuck around that that the great plays. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't work. I thought I was going to be able to be really productive, read a lot and write a lot. And I did some of that, but mostly I just was depressed.
Yeah. I can see that. I had surgery on my hips once.
Really?
Yeah, bone marrow transplant.
Really?
Yeah. And they did about like 80 holes in each side of the hip.
Oh.
And it was about the same thing. Like I was a bit more mobile than you probably were. But like, I mean, it was brutally painful. You know?
My God.
Yeah, it was intense. That was intense. But I remember coming home after that and having to walk up all those steps. And I was so high on morphine that, like, when I got to the top, like, my wife had to catch me because I totally, like, all the blood, like, drained out of my face and I just passed out, like, on the top of the step.
Oh, man.
And my dad and my wife had to, like, catch me and, like, pick me up. Put me back on.
Put you on the couch.
On my, yeah. But fuck, it was so painful. It was so painful. And your hip's like a huge bone, like a huge flat bone. And, like, any movement down there, like, you're rubbing something up against something. Yeah. Wow.
Awesome.
Well, let's go to our next musical break. No, we'll change the subject to something a little bit less ominous. So, back to the band. How did this thing get started? How did you guys meet?
Caleb and I, we have a lot of endeavors together, and we also work together at a bar.
What bar? What bar do you guys work at?
It's called The Pub at Third Place, which is under Third Place Books in Ravenna.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I'd heard him play guitar and sing and write beautiful, amazing songs.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, he was in another band at the time called Saint Siren. Rob and I were in the Glass Notes together. And then it just, one day, I guess, the three of us ended up in Rob's sort of basement studio type of thing where he does a lot of recordings and play a lot of music, and we just started playing songs. I think the first song we played was What the People Want, which ended up being the title of our first debut album.
Yeah.
So we had like weekly rehearsals, started playing, and started to turn into something that resembled a band that could stick around for a while.
Yeah.
Or at least we hope. And started writing songs, started playing out, started getting shows. People liked it. It was sort of spare at first, but then we started growing as the band started coming together. People come out and dance to the songs. They get into it.
When you say spare, are you talking about all of the shows that we played that had like five people at them? That's what you mean. Yeah.
That's no longer the
case. I get your language.
You gotta start somewhere. So yeah, we've been playing for about 2 years. We have the album out, and we're already started working on an EP.
Oh really?
Yeah,
a new EP,
5-6 songs.
Nice.
We have we've written a lot of them. I think the songs, or Caleb's written them, and we put them together. And we have one recorded.
Nice.
So far.
Nice.
So yeah.
So how does the songwriting? Because you guys are all because you Jake, you help with the songwriting in the Glass Notes, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do the lyrics.
You do the lyrics. You're somewhat of a poet, I have heard.
Somewhat of, yeah. Yes, something of.
And Rob in the Glass Notes definitely. Well, he writes music. He writes the music.
So quickly, how that band works? I send Rob a poem. The ones that he likes, he writes the music to. Writes the songs and the melodies and puts it together. And we've been doing that for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So how does this dynamic work? Caleb, are you like chief songwriter then?
Yeah.
For this band?
Yeah.
You don't let anybody give any input?
No.
Just like, no, fuck you.
Mostly, yeah. Mostly, yeah. I write the songs.
He's an asshole.
Yeah, and I'm an asshole about it. Sometimes Jake tries to give me ideas and I just always say no.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. I was in a band, he mentioned it earlier, Saint Siren, a few years ago, and that band played songs that I'd written to be performed solo or anyway, really. It could be, you know, I was trying to write traditional songs, basically, and but I'd always written, a song here and there that were more like popular songs, and when the Great Um started playing, those were the songs that we played. We didn't play any of the songs that I played with Saint Siren. Played What the People Want, which is the name of the record, the title track. And that was a song that for years and years and years I'd wanted to hear in this very particular way. There was no chance I could get Saint Siren to play it and make it sound like I wanted it to sound.
Right.
And so, you know, there's maybe two or three, four songs like that. And we played those, but then I had to start writing songs for the band. And that's been a great challenge for me, to get a certain part of myself out of the way and make room for these guys. I guess that's that's sort of the challenge for me is to keep it in mind what it is that they bring. I mean, Rob is a total maniac on the drums, so making space for him to go nuts, basically. That's a big part of it. He's such a propellant force in the band. That's where I think he really drives the band. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm trailing off into the land of no idea what I'm talking about.
That's the point of this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for listening, I guess. No, that's really interesting, though. Like, I would think that would be kind of a hard thing to do. You know, like, if you start a band and you're like the chief singer songwriter, right? It's like almost you have to put your ego aside a little bit to, like, you know, allow for other parts to be made for that song. Or, you know, I mean, even in some circumstances, it sounds like for What the People Want, you had a certain idea of how you wanted that song to sound, right? You had something already, you had like the architecture already built for that song, and these guys fit that really well once you started playing together? Or, I mean, was it like more of a process to...
Well, that song, I think, actually...
To get it to sound like what you wanted it to sound like.
I don't think it's ever sounded exactly how I, at one time, imagined it.
Mm-hmm. It's better than that?
I'm supposed to say yes. Jake's looking at me. Yes. I think it sounds great on the record. I think when we went into the studio, we spared it down a little bit. We worked on some guitar parts that we hadn't expected to play, and it came out sounding good. It's a little clean. This is something we've been noticing. I haven't heard it myself, but apparently Rob has been hearing some people talk to us about the record. I don't know if you, Jake, heard these comments, but people talking about how clean the record is, how the tones on, like the guitar tones and whatnot.
Yeah.
And when we play live, it's sort of dirty and raw, and
play on some older equipment
and cheaper equipment. Yeah.
And cheaper equipment. Yeah.
Where did you guys record this?
We went to Electro Kitty Studios in Wallingford.
Yeah, yeah.
And worked with a guy named Gary Reynolds, who put in a lot of time with us and gave us a lot of time as well.
Now, did he produce it as well, or did you have a producer?
So he basically produced, 7 tracks on there, and then there's 2 that Rob recorded in his studio. What I think is the 4th song. Called Good Times, and the final song, which is basically an acoustic song of Caleb's, called The Devil. And those turned out to be a little bit more of the dirty side that you kind of hear when we play live. But Gary, you know, he's got like a $1 billion board in his studio, so it's huge and has everything you can do to do whatever we're sound. I guess, you know, he did a certain way that some people think, I've heard a little bit about the sounding a little clean and polished and shiny, maybe, especially as Caleb said, to how we play live.
Right.
Just super loud and oftentimes like 4 on the floor. So I don't know.
It's always hard to kind of accomplish that sometimes in the studio. Like, you know, you always have these, these different tricks in mind. Right when you go in there,
or what it's supposed to, and then what you think it's supposed,
what you
to, sound
think
like,
it's supposed to sound like, and then you get it out, and it's like, oh, this sounds kind of different. Like every time I've gone into the studio, it's always come out way, way different than what I've gone in expecting. You know,
and it's sort of weird because you're going in and you're spending time, you're spending money,
you want
it to sound. You have, or at least I have in my mind some idea of what a professional CD is supposed to sound like, but.
And that's why I've always wanted to record on, like, tape.
Yeah.
Like, record to tape
to
see what that sounds like, because it's so much more, like...
Which is what we did.
Analog.
Like, yeah.
Oh, you did? You did record to tape.
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which was fun.
I think that...
Because I think it sounds good. Like, I mean, there is definitely some clean tones, but I've never seen you guys play live.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, the difference between your live sound and your recorded sound, really. But I really like it.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah. I think it sounds excellent.
Thank you very much.
And you can definitely, you know, I guess I was wondering that a little bit, if you guys did record a tape, because it does, it has that, it definitely has a little bit of the lo-fi, warmer feel to it.
And we recorded live together. We were playing together, you know.
Yeah,
we did some overdubs with guitars and Caleb's singing, obviously, but we recorded live all together at the same time, and I think that gives it a sort of more open feel.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because I've done stuff with Rob for other bands where it's instrument by instrument.
And it
comes out different.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, let's hear another song. Let's go with the title track, What the People Want. And when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Caleb and Jake from the Great here on the Air Raid Podcast. Stay with us, won't you? Don't go away. You downloaded this whole show. It'd be silly to turn us off now. All right, this is What the People Want by the Great We'll be right back with the Air Raid Podcast. Everybody. But they're all talking about, oh, 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 how to fly. But can't you see I'm just trying to get around. I'm just trying to get around. I'm just trying to get around. right, we're back. That was What the People Want off of the album of the same name, which is available October 18th, correct?
Yep.
And you guys are playing you guys are doing a CD release show as well, right?
Yep, at the Sunset in Ballard.
Awesome.
I think you can get the album actually on iTunes or off our Bandcamp page, but that's the official sort of celebration, the CD release party.
Okay.
The 18th.
Cool, cool.
We'll have a bunch of discs. And it's going to be super fun.
Yeah, and who are you guys playing with again?
We're playing with a band called the Roaming Herds of Buffalo, and we're playing with the Jesus Rehab, which are
nice
friends of ours, a couple brothers, rockers.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent, excellent.
It's going to be great.
Do you guys ever get nervous when you go up on stage?
Every time.
I always
really?
Get nervous, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You get the poops?
Sometimes. Is that slang for something, or is that
you're no, man, like whenever I would go up on stage, I would always feel like I needed to go to the bathroom, but I never could. Like nothing would come out. I would just like need to sit there.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was like anxiety needed being alone.
No, I can relate to that. I feel like waste needs to come out of every orifice. Actually,
you get that nervous.
Yeah, vomiting out of my eyeballs. That's the.
Have you ever?
I've
not out of your eyeballs, but
I've thrown up before shows
out of the
for
normal,
sure.
Normal hole.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's terrifying because you're going through, because you're trying to apply some sort of calculation of what you're going to do
right.
to this completely other thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're like as if you could run through the set and do it perfectly in like 5 seconds, like right before the show starts.
Right.
Like,
right.
Okay, well, I'm gonna go, and then we hit that, and then we go to the next song, and then we're done, and we kicked ass, you know. And it's just ridiculous, and so you drive yourself crazy with that. And I think the best way to deal with it is, I don't know, to get in a good conversation about something completely else with somebody.
Totally take your mind off of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're outside the club or like even across the street,
right.
down the block with someone that has nothing to do with the show even,
you know,
to talking about, I don't know, sociobiology in Africa or something. I don't know. Anything that has nothing to do with the music at that moment.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally hear that, man. Like I do miss it though. I don't play music anymore. I just do this fake radio show.
Wait, but, this is fake?
Oh, it's totally fake. Yeah, these mics.
They got them
from
chocolate.
Got them from an IKEA whatever thing.
It's like
display.
The books you put on a shelf that have
right.
words in them.
Yeah, and they're all connected to each other. It's like one big block of books. This is a hollow block of books, my friend. No, but I do miss it though.
Well, I think it drives the performance ultimately. Mm-hmm. You just can't give over to it, or else you just go crazy, you know.
Right.
I think.
Right. Yeah, Jake, you still get a little bit nervous when you guys play shows.
I don't think I'm gonna get nervous. Like it always comes up and hits me before every show.
Yeah.
Like always, which is so annoying. Cause sometimes I think I'm over it, whatever that means. But then it always comes back, and I. Try to remember where I may fuck up in the songs, what I need to do.
Right. What part you always have trouble playing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I also, I suppose when on the times when I'm asked this question, I always say, or the answer that I like is Duke Ellington. I think it was Duke Ellington. Yeah, Duke Ellington was asked what he likes most about performing, and he thought it was stage fright was the most interesting aspect of performing for him.
Really?
It that's the challenge. It's not easy. It's you have to get over it.
Right, right.
And on that particular night, not that it's something to get over ever.
Get over or go through it.
Yeah, get past it. Go through it.
I'm thinking go through it is a better.
That sounds yeah. The only way out is through.
Yeah, Robert Frost.
Yeah.
When I think about it, I think if you're not getting nervous, it must mean you don't have anything at stake.
Yeah.
Right.
You just go into work, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Do you think big artists like Jack White is the first one that comes to mind? Do you think he still gets nervous on stage?
You know, I've heard him, I actually heard him on the Marc Maron podcast talking about this sort of thing. And if I recall rightly, He said from very early on, he never had a problem getting up in front of a ton of people and right. doing his thing.
Yeah.
It's never been a problem for him. So
he could be lying, though.
Of course he could. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's not. I mean,
I bet you there are times.
Have you seen that guy? Have you seen that guy live?
Unfortunately, no. It drives me crazy that I haven't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I saw him. Well, for my first time seeing him live was at this last Sasquatch. Yeah,
he was in town recently, too, I think.
Was he?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, I totally last couple of missed months, the boat on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And he played like a little a secret show or something, too, right?
That venue, people are going to kick me. I think it's a huge venue, but the one that's by the Seahawks Stadium. There's
The Showbox Soto.
Yeah, he was over there.
Right, right. I think he played. I think he played like an impromptu. No.
Was it that or was
show.
It the convention center?
I don't know.
He had to have played like a bigger venue.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, because that's a pretty big name to be playing the Showbox Soto.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was the convention center.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway, but he is just like a powerhouse, man. Yeah. Like literally, I don't think I'd ever seen a show like that. Before, you know, where he was just
force of nature.
Yeah, just such a force on that guitar too. And like, you know, I never really got the fandom behind him. You know, I never really owned any like Jack White. I didn't own any of Jack White's, you know, solo stuff. And so like, I didn't get it, you know.
When you say solo stuff, what are you talking about?
Well, he has his latest album, right?
Yeah, he's got a new album, the Blunderbuss album.
Blunderbuss, yeah.
And then White Stripes, obviously. And then he has like the two other bands, the Rack Hunter.
Yeah, I never owned any Rack Hunters. Yeah. I didn't own any Dead Weather. Okay. Yeah, and I think I only own one White Stripes album. But I never got why people were like, you know, one friend in particular comes to mind that says like he is, you know, he is the best. Like guitar player out there, and I never got it until I saw him play live, and I was like, "Holy shit, he's totally right! Like he is amazing. He is absolutely amazing."
Yeah,
but he didn't. I mean, he came out and he just oozed professionalism when he came out there. He's wearing a suit, you know, and all of his whole band was wearing suits and ties, and he just proceeded to just like rip that guitar to shreds. It was amazing.
I wonder if he breaks a lot of strings. I've seen him play in like YouTube.
He was
clips
bleeding
like,
all over his guitar.
Was he?
Yeah, yeah. That's always a good sign of a good show, right?
Caleb bleeds
blood.
On his guitar all the time.
Do you? You ever cut your fingers open? Oh, yeah. Dang, man. Yeah.
It happens. I get excited. Oh, but it's interesting to hear about you talk about Jack White being a pro. I think that I get the sense that he really honors the tradition, not just of rock and roll, but of American music.
Right, right.
And he takes his role seriously, and I think his role is important. He's like the emperor of rock and roll of American music.
Of like guitar rock.
Not just guitar rock,
don't you think?
Because he plays
piano too,
man.
That's true.
And he can play that those old country blues songs too, you know, like he'll do those blind Willie McTell songs or who's the other guy? I always forget. Well, forget it. Forget it. I forgot it. But you know what I mean? Like it's not just like the shredding.
No, I totally. Yeah, I get what you're saying. But I'm like when I say like guitar rock to me is like somebody who can do that, who can play the blues, who can shred like Hendrix, you know, who has that grit and that I don't know, that like down home feel, for lack of a better term, you know, to them and to their music. And yeah, I think he's definitely got that, right?
Yeah, he's sort of the touchstone or the sort of pinnacle, I think of it. Like we got a little write up in the Seattle Weekly, and there was some mention of one of the songs on the record that's a sort of a dirty blues, and they mentioned that it has like White Stripes like riffs or something. You know, it's like anything that approaches being badass, it, you know, you say, well, it's kind of like this, but I mean,
yeah,
You know what I mean? Like, he's got that thing. Mm-hmm. He's got it down. It's his territory. It's his turf.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
When you guys, when this record first started hitting, you know, when you guys first started sending this out to like local media people, KEXP, local radio station here in Seattle, picked it up, started playing some of the songs. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you guys? Was that like, oh my God, they're playing us on the radio?
Yeah.
What'd that feel like?
I think Caleb and I have talked about this a little bit. That moment you get when you're driving in the car and you didn't know you were going to hear it, and then you check your CD player to see that it's not your CD that's playing in your own CD player.
Right. But it's, and you know that you yourself didn't call in and request it in like an assumed voice.
Yeah.
Like a really bad British accent.
Hello.
Hello.
The Grey's Army is killing in London. but it's those, I mean, you know, you get text messages, hey, you're on the radio, and that's great. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's great because there's an audience listening.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, I think only one time was I in a car or around a radio when it was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a holy shit moment.
Yeah. For get a little tingly?
A little tingly. Yeah. I had to park the car and I turned the radio up and turned the windows down and expected people coming up and looking for my autograph, but they didn't show up.
You're just standing there on the highway
with a Sharpie.
I like it. I like it. Well, that's really cool, man. When I first started hearing you guys on the radio, because I listened to KXP a lot during my day, my work day, that is. I'm not trying to sound like I'm like, in my day. when I first heard you guys on there, I was like, oh, yeah, these guys. That's great.
Nice.
Because I knew that you, Jake, played in Glass Notes, and you're friends with a couple people that I'm friends with as well.
Uh-huh.
And, so that was pretty cool to hear you guys getting played.
Yeah.
And it's still happening.
It's still happening. I think they, hopefully there's plans to continue playing it on that station. We would love that. Some of the DJs have talked to us about wanting to continue to do that.
Right on.
Or at least implying that. It's been great. You know, it's sort of weird territory now because it sounds like we're in the braggadocious territory, but we were on their charts and on their top 10 for Northwest and all that is a huge honor because...
Yeah, yeah. Oh, of course.
I'm from New Jersey. I moved here about 6-7 years ago, and when you first get here, one of the first things you find out about is KEXP and... what an honor it is to be played on there, and then a chance to be played on there regularly is very, very exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
So, what brought you out to Seattle?
Actually, a musician. I grew up with a guy named Matt Watson, who's a hip-hop producer in town and a rapper in town. Goes by Speculation. And he moved out here and then moved back to New Jersey after breaking up with a girlfriend. And then moved back out to Seattle. And on that second trip, I did a road trip, a cross-country trip with him. Sort of fell in love with the city. And a couple months later, quit a job where I was working at a newspaper and did my own drive out here. And Matt got me a job in the building where the pub is, which is where I eventually met Caleb.
Okay.
And so, that was the reason why I came out here. It was also the reason why I guess I'm in some bands with these guys.
Yeah, yeah. So coming from like an out of town, and this is like, wait, you said like 6 years ago?
About that, yeah.
Coming from out of town 6 years ago, the music scene here in Seattle has been doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Some pretty awesome things for like the last, I would say like 10 years, maybe 11 years.
Yeah.
Things kind of started picking back up. Some momentum got going, you know. People were getting excited about this new kind of, what would you call this? Like the type of music that is very prevalent in Seattle right now would be like indie folk rock, right?
Yeah, and there's also that sort
something
of
like
the
that.
Pop where people want to dance, I think.
Yeah,
People want to go out to
like
clubs
soul,
to dance.
Indie soul music now? What?
Well, I think you're hitting on like the Band of Horses, Fleet Foxes sort of thing.
Yes, yes.
And
that's
Brian
what I'm talking
John
about.
Applebee
like, kinda,
is sort of like that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, kind of got that ball rolling, right?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Damian Jurado probably started it a long time ago, and it's just been building and building ever since. But what I want to know is from an outsider perspective of what Like, do you hear about the Seattle music scene elsewhere in the country?
I think nothing.
Or is it just mythological?
I think it's more from
the 90s.
Seattle, just that name as a type of cachet, if I'm using that word correctly, throughout the country as a place where creativity can thrive.
Mm-hmm.
A place where music is respected, where art is respected, and it's not just sort of a hobby, but it's like, you know, a respected
place.
It's
a lifestyle.
Yeah, and a place, you know, it has its place in the city.
Yeah.
I was going to say the endurance, sorry to interrupt you, but the endurance of Sub Pop, I think, is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, how is that not a draw to people, you know, all across the country? You know, especially a lot of people in the middle of the country, you know, who feel just culturally deprived, you know, like I don't know, middle of Kansas or Wyoming or wherever. They're like, I want to do something. I want to be part of something. Where am I going to go? They've, you know, listened to bands off of Sub Pop Sub Pop put out Nirvana's first record, right? Bleach.
Bleach. Yep.
And they've just been kept putting out great records since then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of all kinds.
Yeah.
So I think whether you know the specifics of that or not, that sort of idea pervades and gets out to people. So when I, like, what if I tell friends who live on the East Coast still with Seattle, I think they get this idea of this really cool artistic metropolis. And I think that has a draw to it.
I'm just curious as to, like, you know, how far reaching is what's going on in this city, you know, how that's actually getting, you know, spread. Is it being spread to, you know, the other parts of the country? Because we were talking to, we had Eric Blood on the show a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about the Seattle bubble, right? Mm-hmm. Where everything in the city and, like, kind of, you know, like Portland, kind of Northwest, you know, region, everything is super exciting. It's easy to get shows. It's easy to get, you know, people are starting to get recognition for what they're doing. And you can go on these mini tours, you know, to Portland and maybe Idaho, Bend, you know, Spokane, and do some great stuff. But then you go out to Montana, or you go to, you know, you start fanning out to, like, Colorado or something like that, and it becomes the grind again, you know. And it's harder to get shows down in L.A. Like, nobody's heard of you down in L.A. or something like that. So he's talking about the bubble, how it's like. You know, it's very, the community, the music community, the artistic community here in Seattle is great, but it's not, but it's keeping it insulated.
There's a glass ceiling.
Right.
I think it's spreading. I think it's growing and growing. And I think it's coming off the idea of that making music in Seattle is not going to kill you like it killed a lot of people in their 90s. And I think the city has, you know, I wasn't born and raised here, so maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but I think the sense is that we're coming out of that as a creative population, and it's okay to want to own your position as a musician and as an artist in Seattle.
Yeah.
It's not scary like it maybe once was.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting you say that too, because I think we're also coming out of, like, that hipster shell a little bit.
Exactly.
You know, where people feel, one, okay to dance at a show now. You know, you don't have to stand there with your hands in your pockets, which is amazing. That was when I first saw that at a Seattle show, like, I don't know, a year ago. I was just like, what is happening here?
Why are you even
here? I was a little scared. I was like, oh, that idiot. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing here? Don't you know where you are? Yeah, but... I it'd be interesting to hear from you guys and check back in with you, like, in a year and see how that goes. Because I think that you guys are going to continue to do some great stuff, and it'd be interesting to kind of hear where you're at, like, in a year. Because it feels like it's just starting, right?
That's how
I feel with this.
I hope.
I think we're really young. I mean, when you look at other bands that get the success, the sort of success that you're talking about, where when they tour anywhere in the country, they're going to draw big. Like, I think about the Black Keys quite a bit
in
this
regard. Totally.
those guys worked their asses off for years. They've been around for like 10 or 12 years. I saw
them.
I saw them open for Beck, which for them had to have been a huge deal.
Oh, at the enormous.
The White River Amphitheater, I think. And that was like 2003 or something.
Yeah, when did Rubber Factory come out? That was like their first one, wasn't it?
No, they had an album, Thick Freakness, which is like, it's just super stripped down, a rugged guitar, bluesy sound. And that was their second album, I think, and that came out in like 2003, maybe 2002 or three.
Right, but something like it. But anyway, I mean, you see them in the last year or two on the cover of Rolling Stone as if they've just arrived, and it's ridiculous because they've been rocking out for a decade, you know. But for some people, the Rolling Stone readers or you know, I don't know,
Subaru car commercial watches.
Certain avenues of media that people tap into, and they're like, oh, the Black Keys, they're great, they're this great new rock and roll band. Well, in fact they've been around for 10 years, so on that sort of scale we're almost prenatal as a band. Does that sound weird?
A little bit. I just hope you guys don't get aborted. We'll cut that out. Well, let's we're running a little bit low on time, but I wanted to talk to you guys about this the Monarch Review, web blog that you guys have about arts, right? Poetry, arts, music,
yeah, that's
books.
Caleb and I started.
I'm just going to keep on cutting you off.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, we started that with a friend of ours named Nikolai. I think it was almost, I think November will be 3 years.
Oh,
from
cool.
The initial conversation. We launched online the following February, and we put out two books, and we update 3, 5, 6, 7 times a week online.
Nice.
Poetry, fiction, essays.
And you actually have like writers that go out.
Yeah.
And there's
people that write for us, and we take submissions and we solicit submissions.
Nice.
And we try to publish some great work from people in Seattle. I mean, it's a Seattle-based publication, Seattle-based group, but you know, we publish people from Russia. We have a couple stories coming from that we're publishing from an author in Africa. Coming up, poets from, we just published a poem from the Oregon State Poet Laureate, so it doesn't have to be Seattle based, but we like it when it is.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, definitely. Just doing this show is not reaching out to people in Africa.
Well,
but it's still a grind sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. But so what made you guys, who came up with this idea? And what made you guys want to do it?
I think three of us were on the steps of our building one night, and it was late, and we were drunk, and someone said, hey,
That's how all of these things start, isn't it?
But we actually did it. We had regular Sunday meetings after that, just trying to put it together. Found a friend of ours who could make the website. We got hooked up with submission websites and listservs and found good work. And I have had people come and go, but the core of it is still there. We work with a great visual artist in town, Liz McDonald, some other writers, Dominic Cortez, who's in Jesus Rehab, does a lot of writing for us.
Nice.
Ashley Davidson. And we have some readers and other writers for us. And it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time and some money and, but it's been pretty good. People have been receptive toward it. We've gotten some nice write-ups about it.
You said you've released a couple books. Is that just
Jake always calls
short
them
stories and poetry?
Jake always calls them books. I always call them the print editions because I think of it as a literary journal.
Okay,
as a minor semantic point, perhaps, but it's not like they're a collection of. It's not like an I guess it is an anthology in a way, but. It's more like, sort of in the vein of the Paris Review or what else might it be like the Believer or something.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And we love City Arts and we work with them. I wouldn't say pretty closely, but we're in contact with them, with the people who work and write for them. I really like City Arts, and I like how they incorporate poetry and food reviews and music reviews, sort of an eclectic.
Yeah, yeah. You ever sit down with Mark Baumgartner?
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
I love his new book, Love Rock Revolution, about K Records.
Yes. Yeah. We had him on talking about that book before it was released.
He's great.
Pretty cool story.
He's
about his interactions with.
About doing some writing for us, actually.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah. And that's it. Does sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so you guys get drunk and sit on your doorstep, thinking about great new ways to bring arts to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, I would sit on my front doorstep getting drunk, being like, we should egg the mayors.
Like, aren't they the same thing?
Who am I hanging out? I need to hang out in different circles, apparently. Well, hey, thank you guys so much for coming on the show. It's been a real pleasure talking with both of you, Caleb, Jake.
Yeah.
I wish the best for everything you guys do in the future, including the Monarch Review, and the Great and Glass Notes. Glass Notes is still doing stuff too, right?
Oh yeah, we had a show the other day. When?
Christ, man, you guys are busy. You guys are busy.
Yeah,
and you've got real jobs too. So good luck with that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's pimp your wares here real quick. Where can we find out more about the band, the website?
TheGreatUm.org.com, TheGreatUm.com, TheMonarchReview.org. And then The Great is also has a Bandcamp site. I always forget which way. TheGreatUm.Bandcamp.com, I think, is the order in which it goes.
And we're on iTunes as well. The record's on iTunes.
Yeah, but go to the actual website, TheGreatUm.com, and
you got pictures of the band. I think a video.
Can you buy stuff
there?
from your
You can
website?
Certainly buy stuff from the Bandcamp site, which I'm sure there's a link to on our regular site.
You probably get a bigger share of that too, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's always best.
Yeah.
Always best to go there. Well, yeah, the album is great.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed what I've heard so far, and thank you guys for bringing me a free copy. That's fantastic. We're going to go out today with the song Good Times by The Great Wait, okay, rewind. Hold on. Stop the press.
Okay.
Great What is that all about?
Does it mean anything to you?
Does it mean...
Because I've had one person get it right in the way that if I think theoretically, like if it means something.
Like, is it like, I was thinking about it today. It's like when you say where you're pausing in like a conversation and then you come up with the greatest comeback or the greatest thing to say after that like that's the great right? That's the great pause.
That's pretty good.
I like that.
We'll go with that.
Okay. Sounds great.
This is Good Times by The Great which I just figured out. we'll be back next week with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest Sarah Cahoon. So make sure to tune in for that. Thanks all for listening. And remember, go and go to the website. Go to iTunes. Rate and review the show. It helps us out a lot to continue to get great guests like The Great on the show and bring it to your ears. So, all right, this is Good Times. Have a great week, everybody. Your face white.